Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, brought to you by @off1season on Instagram, and accounts bringing unique designs from the ages and keeping you entertained. Follow @off1season on Twitter and Instagram today to learn more. Today's episode is called Some Animals Are More Equal Than Others. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy, and I'm joined by Matt Trumpets. How's it going there, Matt?
It's actually going pretty good, despite the amazingly long day I had yesterday.
Go on then. Let's hear your humble brag. What were you doing yesterday that was so fantastic and tiring?
Well, you know, it was just one of those things. I got one of those calls to do the trumpet playing side of my life with, a little band called the Drifters, who you might have heard of, you know, and some other people like the Del Satins and the Deezes and the Dozes. It happens every so often, you know.
I'm a little young for all those references, Matt, but I'm going to Google all of them. Nearly as good as my daughter's 6th birthday party, where we all got to dress up as superheroes. Now, talking about a hero of the Formula One world, a leader of gladiators and men, we are joined by former Lotus F1 boss Matthew Carter. How's it going, Mr. Carter?
Very good, very good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. We're getting really, really pumped for the F1 season. We've actually seen cars on track. Is this the time you start to get excited, or have you had all the information we've got for weeks now?
As in now looking at this season, or you mean historically when we were in this position in the past? Now looking forward, yeah, I'm excited. I think it's going to be a good season.
Yeah, I think it is going to be good. We're definitely going to ask what it was like, because uniquely among the three of us, yes, you've not played with the Drifters, but you have done an F1 testing session.
Yes.
Not personally you in the car.
No, not me in the car, no. I did three years of F1 testing and filming days, which is what you'll often see before or sometimes after the testing sessions.
Now, we know you have an extensive knowledge of the inner circles of the F1 paddock, but now that you're comfy in the Missed Apex shed, we also want to get some general punditry from you as well, Matthew. So are you able to join our 3-man panel to give your expert views and, crucially, wild speculation? Can you do that?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Let's have a look at what is Big Dirty News. The Big Dirty News is sort of you, Matthew Carter. We're calling it the Carter Directive. Teams will now have to provide the same modes with access to the same fuels. Matt, why don't you clarify a little bit what we're talking about? Because we did talk about it on the last show with Chris Stevens.
We did talk about it. And in essence, this is an attempt by the FIA to rein in, as it were, some teams being more equal than others. The feeling is, and I think this came out, although obviously when you discussed it, when we discussed the whole Mercedes giving you the extra engine mode, it came out also very much with the Renault Toro Rosso, the end of their, the torrid end of their relationship. Did I get that word right? I hope I did. But in essence, the FIA is trying to level the playing field a little bit so that the manufacturers don't have access to more power with the same engine than their customer teams. They're trying to make things more equal for the customers And one big way those distinctions were shaded has been through special compounds of oil, a lot of which has been burned in the combustion chamber, as we know from the various technical directives last year. And it's really, I think, just their attempt to address it, to sum it up in a nutshell.
So this must be exactly what you would have wanted as a team boss.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's difficult, as we talked about before. The manufacturers of the engines are effectively, I mean, you're a customer of that manufacturer. So you are, in some respects, bound to how they want you to run their engine, because they understand how the engine works and the tolerances and the way, especially this season with the number of engines being reduced again. I think to a certain extent, you do have to bow a little bit to what the manufacturers are saying. I think another one of the reasons they brought this in, much as I don't want to direct it away from us and what we talked about,
no.
I think the fact that Sauber were running a year-old engine last year didn't go down very well with a lot of the teams and to a certain extent with the people that were viewing the sport as well. To see a car so far off the back of the grid with a year-old engine was, I mean, it just didn't look right in any way, shape or form. So I think by making them give them a current up-to-date engine, I think that probably is another one of the reasons they've done it.
That would be an actual question that I have. I mean, my understanding was that Sauber chose that year-old engine for financial reasons, not
Absolutely.
Because Ferrari wouldn't have, I think Ferrari would have probably been okay selling them a brand new engine. They literally couldn't afford it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was it. I saw some paperwork when I was at Manor briefly. They had a deal with Ferrari, if you remember, at the start of the 2015 season, you know, when they missed the first few races. And that was because Ferrari couldn't provide or didn't provide the engines across the board as they needed to. So sometimes if Ferrari have only got so many components of their current engine, Haas obviously being their, well, it may change this year, but certainly last year Haas was probably their preferred second team, if you like. I think that most of the parts would go to Ferrari first and then would dribble down to Haas and Sauber maybe with a year-old engine. I mean, it's difficult with a year-old engine because they still have to provide all the backup for it. So to a certain extent, it would almost cost Ferrari more or cost a team more to be supplying two different sorts of engines, because you've got, you know, a current engine with all the current specifications, and then you've got a year-old engine with all the year-old specifications. So I think it's just cleaned it all up and made it all tidy and everyone's got the same engines. With regard to the fuel, with the modes and the specific points that we were talking about, again, I can't see how they can implement it, because the reason that we were given that extra engine mode, or the reason we were given access to, or the reason we were told that we could go into that engine mode, was for a specific time in a specific part of a race. Now, I don't think that they can necessarily turn around and say to a team boss sitting on a wall, yes, you've got access to this whenever you need it, because we could blow the engine up in one race, and how does that look for the manufacturer going forward? So if all Mercedes customer teams are blowing engines up after two or three races, then it's not going to look good. And clearly Mercedes engineers and technicians know at which time they can run the engines in those modes. So I think having access to all the engine modes, I don't necessarily think it's changed. It's whether or not you would specifically have the right to access those engine modes whenever you need them.
Yeah, and it's even more tricky this season with the three engines. I mean, it was bad enough with the four engines, so it is quite critical they don't blow them up. Would this issue go away if you had cheaper engines that were only designed to last for one or two races?
I guess to a certain extent, but that is all to do with the cost control, or the attempts at cost control, because back in the day, they used to have as many engines as they wanted. They could qualify with one engine and race with a different engine.
And Rob Graham in the chat room says, was that mode burning more oil? Yeah. So, I mean, it's not as simple, is it, Matt, as just saying, let's just have the same software, engine and modes. There's also other things to consider, such as how it's used, how it's cooled, whether they burn oil or not.
Go ahead. Say the word ancillaries in Summer's accent for me.
Ancillaries.
Yes, exactly.
It's ancillaries, I suppose. There you go.
Heteroclitus brings up the excellent and true point. How, for example, does this affect Force India being air-cooled, contrary to Mercedes being water-cooled? Part of the problem is the parts of the cars that aren't supplied by the power unit manufacturers can be different, and this can affect what you can get out of the engine and how you can best use it. And it sounds like to me, I mean, I think to put a gloss on it, basically what they're saying is where you only had access to that special mode when Mercedes decided it was correct for you. It sounds like what the FIA is wanting to do is to let the team principal decide when to employ it and when to employ it. So you have all the modes. You can choose to employ it, but you know, we've calculated that if you use it for more than, you know, 3 minutes a race, you're going to blow up your engine early, and that will cost you money. So it's a choice. It's who's making that choice, and the fact that you know it's there, and you can choose to take the risk if that's what you feel is important for your team.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's almost a little bit like going back to KERS, where you had that button and you could choose when you were going to press that button for X number of seconds per lap. It's kind of goes back to that philosophy. The other thing that you have to, I mean, and I hate to be the one that always brings it back sometimes to money and business, but you know, the engines are very expensive. In our Mercedes-Benz contract that we had back in 2015, we were only allowed to do so many miles on testing engines, and we were only allowed to do so many miles on the race engines. So therefore, what we would do in testing sometimes is that we couldn't run as much as the Mercedes-Benz team because we only had so many engines as part of our contract. And if you wanted an extra engine for testing, then you paid extra money for it. Which makes sense. You know, it's Mercedes or Ferrari or Honda or Renault or a supplying engine. It's costing them money to do it. So they can only supply so many. So therefore, you are slightly restricted on what you do and when you do it. You also, as a team principal, you don't want to be upsetting your engine manufacturer because they do bring upgrades. And I'm not sure how the FIA are going to deal with this, but upgrades always used to come through. The Mercedes-Benz team would get the upgrade first, and then they'd filter down to the customer teams maybe one or two events afterwards. So if you've upset Mercedes-Benz by running in some engine mode that they don't particularly want you to run in, you know, could the update come to you later than other teams? It really is sort of opening a can of worms.
Yeah, and as is pointed out here in the chat room by You American, now he quotes Toto Wolff as saying, all the clients always get the same mapping. Now, I'm not going to ask you to comment on that, but Horner said, ask Claire Williams where the push for the Carter directive came from. Now, I don't think Horner actually said Carter directive. Do you know what Christian Horner might be alluding to then? So do you think that maybe Claire Williams finds herself in a similar situation that you did, where they're saying, you know, well, why can't we have these modes that you seem to have and we don't?
Of course. 100%. I mean, I'm not necessarily sure it's that you have them and we don't. It's having access to them. Because as I tried to explain before, we as a team, I'll go back to refer to us as Lotus with Mercedes-Benz engines or with Renault engines. The Mercedes-Benz engine was run by Mercedes-Benz employees that sat in our garage. And they were the ones that decided which engine mode you had to go into. Now, they worked and were paid by Mercedes-Benz, not by Lotus. So whilst they had the best interests of us as Lotus at heart, they equally were working for Mercedes-Benz. So if a Mercedes-Benz car was behind us, was due to lap us, or because of a pit strategy we'd come out ahead of, or et cetera, any one of a whole gander of different options, then they could decide, okay, this is the engine mode that you go into for this period of time.
And certainly from my outside perspective, I wouldn't want to comment as somebody who knows anything. It certainly seemed like Renault were perceived to have taken that kind of action with Toro Rosso when they were both fighting for sixth place last season. Now, this season, as they get higher up the field, potentially, and McLaren join them higher up the field, they're going to find themselves in and amongst four other Renault cars regularly. It does make you wonder whether they're going to fight back and push back against this directive now. Is there more than one way to ensure they still have an engine advantage?
The thing is, and where this, it always seems to fall out like this in Formula One, is how on earth are the FIA going to implement this? How can they turn around and say, I mean, so Mercedes-Benz turn around and say, yes, everyone's got the same engine modes, but you can't go into that engine mode because, you know, you've run your engine at too, as Matt said earlier, you know, your engine's running at too high a temperature, therefore you've got to run it in this mode. There was all, I mean, these engines are so technical. I mean, and I've regularly said I'm not an engineer, I'm not technically minded, but you know, if someone from Mercedes-Benz is saying you're not recovering energy as quickly as you should be, therefore you need to clip your engine at the end of the straight, they're words. They don't, you know, I'm sitting there thinking on the pit wall thinking, okay, right, we need to start clipping our engine at the end of the straights. What does that mean? Well, it means that you back off the gas maybe 50 yards earlier. And then the engine regenerates and it recharges the electrical hybrid system. Now, I'm not technically enough to be able to turn around and say to the Mercedes-Benz engineer, oh, I don't agree with that. We're not going to do that clipping, because if you don't do the clipping, then technically your hybrid system would not recharge and you wouldn't have any electrical power and you'd be down on power, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very difficult, especially in the heat of a race, to be able to turn around and say, I don't agree with what that Mercedes engineer is saying or that Renault engineer is saying. So whilst I think, I'll try and wrap up quickly, whilst I think they probably will have the same engine modes and they'll be available, whether or not they'll be able to go into them anytime they want, I can't see that they can allow that to happen. And I also can't see how they can police it.
Yeah, and for example, if a Renault of, say, Carlos Sainz is coming up behind Stoffel van Dorn and suddenly the Renault engineer says, hey, do you know what, guys? You're not going to believe this. I'm reading on Stoffel's car that you're overheating. And if you don't just back it off 5%, you're going to run into trouble. You know, that is obviously casting a wild aspersion to Renault's tactics, but certainly we're still open to that kind of manipulation when you've got a guy sat in the garage like a wolf in the
sheep's pen. There's so much money involved in Formula One that it's naive to think that that isn't going to happen. And I'll go out there and say it, and I said it last season, it's naive to think it's not going to happen, because there is so much money difference between finishing 7th and 8th or finishing 5th and 6th in the Constructors' Championship. And it's one of the reasons that Ron Dennis went to Honda in the first place when he left Mercedes. Because when he was at Mercedes, he openly said, I think he said it out loud, he certainly said it to me, he never felt that he would be allowed to beat the Mercedes works team with a Mercedes engine. So therefore, he had to go down the route of, especially in the current format with the engines being so important, he therefore made the decision to go to Honda because they were the only team. As I think has been made public, he vetoed Honda supplying anyone else when they were supplying McLaren, so that they were the only Honda team. Because he realized that it's almost impossible to beat a works team with a works engine.
So,
because they're so technical.
Yeah, well, Red Bull would have got away with it last season because Renault were a bit further down the pack, 6th and 7th place. It will be interesting this season if Renault come, you know, a bit forward. Now, we've got a bit more of a technical question, which you might have
let me just pick up on that ever so quickly.
Go
because
for it.
Red Bull are quite a specific. Red Bull, because of the power that they have with their four world championships, if you like, when they had the Renault engine, and obviously they rebranded it Tag Heuer, but the Renault engine, they were given, Renault weren't in the sport at that time. So therefore they effectively got Renault's full weight of the Renault behind them. So when we at Lotus had a Renault engine, we knew that Red Bull were getting parts ahead of us. We knew that they were getting the best engineers. We knew that all the best equipment was going to them from Renault. What Red Bull also did was they employed a lot of their own engine guys to help them to improve the Renault engine. So they've worked side by side with Renault to improve what Renault give them. So they're ever so slightly different in so much as I think that Red Bull have got a lot more technical knowledge of the engine than I think a lot of people realize.
And I'm sure,
therefore, I think they can run it slightly differently. And I think they do run it slightly differently.
And I'm sure that spirit of cooperation will, you know, continue even if they're fighting for a world title. So Callum Springall in the chat room asked something of a technical question, which I was thinking yesterday as I was walking through the snow. How much difference would things like oil and fuel supplies and cooling make to a power unit relative to how another team is using it? So we briefly touched upon some of the teams have got their own petrol deals and perhaps oil deals that are tied in with sponsorships. Does the Mercedes engine say optimally run on one kind of fuel? Although I believe currently all the Mercedes customers do use Petronas fuel, if I'm correct. If a team decides to divert, does it make a huge difference?
Well, that's exactly what happened to McLaren in 2014.
Aha, explain.
So McLaren had an engine, an oil deal with, was it Esso, maybe? I think it was Esso. And it was a sponsorship and supply deal that was worth so much money that they refused, or they didn't go with Petronas. So they ran their own fuel in 2014 at the start of the hybrid era. And apparently the Mercedes-Benz engineers told us when we went to Mercedes in 2015, that was the reason that they weren't as quick. They could physically see. I mean, Petronas worked with Mercedes-Benz through the whole of the development of that hybrid engine.
Now,
yeah.
Go on, Matt.
Sorry, I forgot to make my little here I am noise to you. But we've also heard from your old friend Cyril that if any of the Renault customer teams wish to run their own specification of fuel, it will cost an extra 5 million euros, I believe, for them to optimize the engine to that particular specification of fuel. So it makes a big difference.
Yeah, exactly. And that, you know, I keep coming back to there's so much money in Formula One. That was exactly what happened with Mercedes-Benz and McLaren. So McLaren were obviously, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out, they were getting more money from Esso than it was going to cost them to pay the extra two Mercedes-Benz to run a different oil. I mean, even there was times when we were at Lotus when we were told that we could run the Petronas oil for the Mercedes-Benz, but we could put it into a Total oil barrel. Because Total had a special relationship with Roman, which went back over years and years and years. So we were asking whether or not we could maintain Total oils and run them with a Mercedes-Benz. And they said absolutely no. Well, they said we could. They gave us a price to do it, but they also said it's going to affect the performance of the car. So we didn't want to do it. But they said, we're happy for you to put Total barrels in the back of the garage and put Petronas oil in it.
Wow. Next, you're going to tell me that Lewis Hamilton doesn't really sit and drink Monster Energy drink throughout the entire pre-race build-up. But it is fascinating to think back to 2014 when we were seeing a downward slide of McLaren anyway, and everyone was wondering, you know, when they were arguing about saying, well, you will never beat the works team. They weren't even the second best Mercedes team at the time, though. You know, they were struggling against Force India and Williams.
It depends how early in the 2014 season you're talking. They were on the podium in Australia.
Nah, they always do well in Australia.
So yeah, I mean, the 2014 season was a very strange season anyway, because it was the start of the hybrid era, and I don't think anyone really understood what was going on. I think they probably did, other than the oil, I think they were probably a better car than the Williams that season, even though Williams finished higher.
Hey Matt, let's talk about a bit of testing. What do you reckon?
I can go. In fact, just before you go there, I can go back to
he carted us.
Go back to the fuels and testing and all the engine. So I mean, the engine that we were supplied by Mercedes, as I said before, you only got so much testing mileage out of that engine. So therefore, going to testing with to test oils and to test fuels and to test everything, it was all so strictly controlled by Mercedes and by Renault. So they could control how much mileage you were doing in testing by how much fuel they were giving you, by how much mileage they would allow you to put onto your engine. So everything was really strictly governed. And certainly back in 2015, Mercedes-Benz were just out there lapping for fun and testing, whereas we had to sit in the garage for certain big periods of time because we simply couldn't put the mileage or the fuel into the car.
Oh, yes. Now, certainly, I've always felt that one of Mercedes' huge advantages early on in the hybrid era was they were almost instantly reliable, and they got in probably more laps on the medium tyre than other teams did in total. I didn't kind of realise that was mandated. Was there no other way around that then?
Again, for us at Lotus, a lot of it was financial. So yes, I think from memory, I think it was an extra 750,000 for an extra testing engine as part of the contract. So on top of the contract that we were paying, if we paid an extra 750 euros, then we got an extra engine that we could use in testing. And I believe that Williams did that, because I remember one year we were sitting in the garage watching Williams and Mercedes go round and round and round, and my guys were saying, look, you know, we can only do another 10 laps. When you look at the testing as well, when you were talking about cooling earlier on and how the cooling affects it, that is, so you design, depending on where you are in the grid, and it almost falls back to the point of someone like a Haas would maybe have an advantage because they are using so much of Ferrari's technologies and Ferrari's information. But when you design the car, you design your own cooling systems. So yes, for sure, when you go to testing, it happened to us with Renault. When we went in 2014, we were overheating every time we went to and then you'll see them cut pieces of the, they actually physically cut pieces of the engine away, or of the housing away, just to allow more cooling to come through.
Have you seen the new McLaren? It looks very small on the pod intake. Yeah. So you're wondering if they've gone for
and that's obviously developed. That's obviously developed every year. You know, every year the engines have got more and more efficient. Every year the cooling has got better and better and better. Cooling was a huge 2014. Cooling was a huge thing. I don't know if you remember the manners. They used to throw wet towels on the back of the car every time it came into the garage because they were worried about burning the paintwork on the back of the car because they had it cut so tight to where the engine was.
Don Byrne in the chat room says, so when a car is suffering from, say, exhaust problems, it might be the engine supplier nobbling his customer, brackets, puts on his McLaren-branded aluminium thought shielding device, close brackets. Okay, so look, let's get some words from you, Trumpets.
Well, I just am having the thought that, in essence, these charges for the extra engine, these charges for the fuel will only give you this much. It really amounts to basically another financial stricture to keep the midfield in the midfield-ish. Or I mean, by midfield, obviously we're talking about how much money you really have to play with over the course of a whole season.
And yeah, so exactly.
I thought it would be very interesting, given that, to go right this second and look at who ran the most laps in this first week of testing, because that should then therefore be a reflection of exactly what we're talking about. So sorry about that, Spanners. I've just thrown you a curve. And it turns out, not surprisingly, that Toro Rosso ran the most kilometers in the first week of testing, followed by Ferrari and Mercedes a little bit behind. And then, kind of on a par, Sauber and Williams. And at the low end, we had Red Bull, McLaren more than Red Bull, then Red Bull, Haas, and Force India way down the field. So interesting to think that Haas ran 870 kilometers versus Sauber's 1300.
So, Trumpets, are you trying to surmise then, you've linked these statistics with what Matthew Carter is saying, and perhaps Force India are finding themselves in a similar position where they're restricted on laps. Can you imagine, Matthew Carter, that this is in fact the scenario?
I can only surmise, but yes.
Wild speculation.
For sure. I mean, Force India for sure were in a similar position to Lotus. Williams, I don't know how much money they're getting in from their drivers now, but certainly they were in a similar position as well. But Force India for sure would not have the money to pay for an extra testing engine. And if their contract was the same as the Mercedes-Benz contract that we have, then they'll be restricted on the amount of running that they can do. And you can say that it's a way of keeping the midfield teams in the midfield, but again, that's life, isn't it? It's, you know, that's if they get some extra sponsors and they pay some extra dollars and they get some extra testing time. So, and Sauber have made the decision, Sauber have gone to Ferrari, they've got a current engine with their Alfa Romeo deal. As far as I can work out, I think they're probably getting some sort of kickback help from Ferrari in some way, shape or form.
They've also taken Leclerc on as a driver, and that would be the difference to Haas as well.
Of course.
Cool. Oh, we got some wild speculation there and some actual thought. Matt, you have thrown me off, but I appreciate how you linked in a later item into what Matthew Carter was saying. So on this occasion, we'll allow it, but you can't deny me playing my little bumpery bit, can you? That's what gets our sponsors in. Jazzy intros, trying to sound dead radio in that. But we have definitely moved into the realm of testing. Trumpets, why don't you kind of give us a little summary of what we've seen from testing time-wise and perhaps put it in a little bit of context, because it was quite hard to tease out who was better than who and who'd done well and who hadn't.
Yes, well, fortunately, there was no disagreement at all in our little production group about what could possibly be learned through testing. But it'll be nice to get Mr. Carter's opinion on it. And before I go any further, I do want to thank Peter Hlawiczka, our @HLAWICZKA. All of these statistics I'm about to give you are taken from his Twitter account. And I can only highly recommend, if you're into the technical aspect of the sport, that you do give him a follow. And let's start with times. And here's an interesting statistic to look at. Improvement from 2017 to 2018. Things we know are different. Tires are different. Pirelli's made a big change in their tires. But we haven't seen a big change in the chassis regulations as we did from 2016 to 2017. So this should be an example of maybe development across 2017 plus the effect of the new Pirelli's. And some of these are hard to compare because they were set on different tires and obviously different weather conditions and probably slightly different fuel loads. But Haas, for example, went from a 122.118 being their fastest 2017 testing time to a 120.317 on the same set of tires, on the same compound of tires. Now, that's going to be one faster based on how Pirelli's done it. So it would be like going from the soft to the super soft, for example. But still, that's an improvement of 1.8 seconds from last year to this year, which is not insignificant. Williams also stayed on the softs. They only gained about 0.9 seconds, although they have new drivers in. So, well, I guess Stroll isn't a new driver, but anyway, I should probably not get into that. And then Ferrari, on the other hand, only gained, about 0.3, about 0.3 seconds.
So what you're saying, without doubt, for sure, is that the midfield and rear teams have definitely gained more time than the front-running teams, and it's all going to be squashed up, basically like a load of beads on a string being tipped from one end to another for 2 hours of racing. Now, obviously, that's not what you're implying at all, but we see these times, we look at improvements, people suddenly come out and say, oh, this is a sign that McLaren are doing really well. This is a sign that Mercedes are going to dominate again. This is a sign that Force India are in trouble. But you've seen it from the inside, Matthew. What is the difference between what you can see and what we can see as pundits? Basically, can we tell anything from what we've seen last week?
No.
That's a fantastic answer.
I fully appreciate that fans just want to see the cars on the track and they want to look at times. But certainly this first testing period, times are completely irrelevant. They are, and the teams aren't interested in putting good times in particularly. So I'll give you an example. I had Charles Peak as our reserve driver in 2014, if you remember. Because he was quite nasty to us in Spa. But I managed to get him to the top of one of the day's timing sheets in our Renault engine in 2014 by putting almost enough fuel to get him around two laps, putting him on the super soft tyres and sending him out there. And he went to the top of the time sheets.
Okay, but so you did that on purpose to get to the top of the time sheets?
1,000,000%. So there's a testing day, and someone will dig it out. I'm sure it was 2014. I think it was Jerez, I think, where we were testing them, but wherever it was. And we got him to the top of the timesheets. And, you know, it was such a bluff. It was unbelievable. And they do that. And you saw McLaren. If you look at the times, you look at the times from day four of testing. So I think Lewis was top on medium tyres and Van Dorn was second on what they call it now, ultra, hyper, mega soft or whatever. But he was four grades of tyres better than Lewis, and he was second. So why did McLaren do that? So they did that to get him second in the timesheets, because on that day in history, people will look back at those timesheets and they'll say, look, McLaren was second fastest. There's no way McLaren is second fastest. And the teams aren't there to do that. They're there to – testing is all about – well, it's testing. So although there's not been great changes in the chassis design, during a season, and this is a great stat that I was given when I first went to Lotus, during the season, the car that finishes in Abu Dhabi is something like 90% different from the car that started in Australia. And that's every single part is constantly being developed, every bolt, nut, screw, piece of bodywork, and not just the aerodynamic areas, everywhere is constantly being improved. So between the end of the season and the start of the season, the cars will be pretty much brand new. So testing is all about, you know, sometimes they call it a shakedown, sometimes they call it whatever, but it's get the driver in the car, get him out onto track and get him pounding around doing as many laps as possible to see what's going to break. And then you go and you test. So this first period is all about seeing what's going to break. It's all about seeing you've probably got some new mechanics. You've probably got some new guys in the pit lane that have never been before. So there's all about integrating those guys in. If you've got new drivers, the new drivers will have specific ways that they want to get in and out of the car, would you believe? They've got different ways of, I mean, we had, so when I had Pastor and Roman, they had two completely different ways of changing gear. So Roman would be very similar to a car, like a road car, where you go down on one side and up on the other. Pastor would go away for up and towards for down. So sometimes he could, so either side, he could change up and down. So that had to be reconfigured. And then you've got, you know, there's guys who have got to get their heads around. So testing is all about just putting those, all that man hours and all those hundreds and hundreds of people into one place and into a car and to get out there and to go and drive it and to see whether or not everything is doing exactly what you thought it was doing. You've then, once you start to realize that the car's not going to fall to pieces, it's not going to overheat or the gearbox is working okay, you can then start looking at when they put these big aero brakes on the side of the car, and then they work out whether or not what's happening in real life is the same as what happens in the wind tunnel. Then as long as they can get that correlation right, then the second period of testing, they can start saying, right, so we know that that is the same as what happens in the wind tunnels. So now we can say, if we put that new front wing on that we've designed, is that going to affect the wake over the rear of the car or whatever? So testing times, honestly, in testing for this first week are almost irrelevant.
So really, yeah, we're not telling anything from aero. I would have presumed naively that people would turn up with an aero package ready to race. But if this is truly a shakedown, it's kind of made me feel a bit useless, really. I think we've spent the last week, haven't we, Matt, sitting in the WhatsApp group, debating every little minutiae and detail and trying to tease out what we can. May as well have gone to bed.
But that is happening as well. Don't get me wrong. There is, you know, they are testing different things. They're testing different areas. There's different concepts that they're trying. There's different all sorts of different things. And that is why they're testing. And that's why, since testing has been reduced, they have to do it somewhere. You know, you can't do it. There's no other place that you can go and test whether or not the car's going to overheat.
Yeah, well, I think, and one thing that was sort of tragic in terms of the weather, but one thing Pirelli would have been very interested in is how their new tires are actually working, despite the surface at Barcelona being entirely redone. And it, at least on its face, the fact that the tires seem to be working in terms of the, we didn't see a big spread, but they're also not exploding. But I do find it interesting to look at the same team on the same tire year over year, because it gives you a general idea of the sort of improvement that they've seen over the season, even though...
Yes, for sure. But then the clever journalists, and I remember this going back to that Charles Peak testing time, the clever journalists will realize when cars are going out with very little fuel on, because they can look at how many laps they've done. So if a car goes out, does one warm-up lap, does a hot lap, and then comes straight back into the pits, they know it's only got a small amount of fuel in. If, for example, Mercedes... And I don't know this for a fact, but probably Lewis's lap that he set was probably in the middle of a run of 50 laps or whatever. You know, they'll try and run a race distance. They'll try and run everything. They're trying to test everything to the max. So they'll run a race distance. They'll do a full race simulation where Lewis will go out and do 30 laps, come into a racing pit stop, go out and do the rest of the race simulation. So they're testing everything that they can. So whilst I said all that, and I am super negative, maybe a little bit about that, you do also generally, you'll see Mercedes, Ferrari, you'll see the order very, very similar in terms of times. So whilst they're not really trying, there will be the natural order will pretty much be what you're seeing at the moment, which is Mercedes and Ferrari at the front, I think with Red Bull somewhere just behind, and then the rest of the team sort of falling below that.
I tell you what, the chat room are very interested in this whole glory runs thing. I think everybody's always talks about glory runs, and the one that I pointed to specifically was how suspicious it was that Williams didn't have a sponsor. I think it was in 2014. In fact, here we go, Rob Graham in the chat room, James Funnell in the chat room. Williams definitely did this in 2014. They seem to put in glory laps as well, perhaps with parts that they couldn't have raced with, and then suddenly Mercedes turn up as a sponsor. Probably not unrelated. We've got Nick Alexander, our panelist, has just sent me a WhatsApp saying David Hill complained in his autobiography that Arrow sent him out with no fuel to lie their way up the timesheet. It's not useful data, but they needed sponsors. Looking faster attracts more sponsors. Surely they're onto it by now. And if they weren't already, you've completely confirmed it. And surely now no one's going to sponsor anyone until Melbourne's Q3 session has finished.
Well, that presupposes that sponsors only want to sponsor teams at the front, which doesn't happen. Sponsors want airtime. Sponsors want to be seen on the TV.
Does this mean we're going to have to call them Carter laps now?
Oh, man, sounds yeah. Good. Carter sounds peak good. Laps.
But, yeah, it is that. I mean, what I was trying to say there is that sponsors don't necessarily need to be on the teams at the front. Don't forget, the teams at the front cost more for sponsors than the teams at the midfield and at the back end. And if there's a crash or if there's some interesting midfield, if Lewis Hamilton is 20 seconds clear at the front of the race, you're not going to see him much on the TV. And that's what the sponsors are interested in. So if there's a great ding-dong battle between a Sauber and a Toro Rosso, then you maybe will see 20 laps of that.
Yeah, okay. So I do have a question for you, because you are a team principal. And I'm wondering about the team's priorities. Now, I know from Summers and from what you just mentioned that one of the biggest priorities would seem to be just the correlation between your CFD and your wind tunnel and what you're actually seeing on track. I know that another one is just basic mileage, like how many miles can we pile on the car to see what's going to break and what's going to be problematic and what's not. And then there's sort of this third one of we need to get our drivers acclimated to how the car behaves this year. So we want to try and get them the roughly equal amounts of miles. And it's probably, I'm guessing, more important the less experience the driver has. So which one of those, when you have limited miles because you have limited funds, which one of those comes first?
I think for us, certainly limited miles and limited funds, for us, it was definitely all about making sure that the car was shaken down, if you want to use that terminology, that it wasn't going to, we weren't going to go to Melbourne and the car wasn't going to overheat on the second lap, or the gearbox wasn't going to break on the 10th lap. So I think for us, the priority was to make sure that everything was settled in the car, that the design philosophy was working in so much as everything that we bolted onto the car worked and the car was going to complete race distance. That was first. The drivers probably is second. I think maybe the drivers, to make sure they're, as I just said, you know, a driver moving from one team to another, it's going to be very, very different. How the steering wheel set up, for example. I know, I think Lewis Hamilton talked about that when he first went to Mercedes. Did he not take him a year to get the steering wheel or the buttons on the steering wheel in the correct places that he wanted them in? So to get a driver in there. So whilst you can do that in the simulator back at the factory, there's nothing like having it on, you know, having racing around a proper circuit whilst you're trying to change the buttons, as Pastor Maldonado, if you remember him going off in China or wherever it was, when he was trying to change a button on a corner and he drove off onto the grass. So, you know, real life getting the drivers in the car is important. And I think after that, so those two things, certainly with limited mileage, then you come onto aero. And again, with the smaller teams, that's maybe because of the money as well, because we're not bringing aero updates as often as the big teams. So I think Force India quite often talk about the fact that they'll do two or three big update packages during the season, whereas Mercedes and Red Bull.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ferrari, you're doing a big update package every single race. They'll have a Melbourne specific race setup. They'll have a Abu Dhabi specific race setup. So for the bigger teams, I think aero is more important and correlation is more important. For the smaller teams, I think it's making sure that everything is working according to plan.
Slightly tangenting general question from that. How do you deal with the fact that those teams are so out of reach? Because, you know, a lot of the things you've talked about, and by the way, thank you for being so frank and open, are the deltas between what you can do and what the top teams at the front can do. Is it not easy, but are you able to kind of settle yourself into the midfield battle you're going to have, or the battle at the back you're going to have, you know, without, you know, just staring in the distance and going, why can't I be on their tail?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yes, it's fairly easy to say. I think, and again, I don't want to burst anyone's illusions, but I think that when you start the season, you very much know that you're not. So I can only go back to 2014, 2015 with Lotus. So if we found ourselves in a battle with Lewis Hamilton, if he was coming up behind us to lap us, we would tell the drivers, you know, don't ruin your tires. Don't, you know, don't ruin the, you know, don't overheat the tires. Don't overheat the brakes. Don't shred things fighting against something that's not our battle. You know, let him go past and we're fighting with the Force India that's behind him.
Yeah, I know we don't want to hear that, but it's probably quite realistic. So back to testing a little bit. We've sort of heard about what you're trying to achieve, what the teams are trying to achieve. But I was wondering, from a sporting point of view, does anything happen where you look at another team and go, oh, right, they were our rivals and they've really got a march in this area? And as the chat room's asking, do the teams have GPS traces from the other cars to quantify how well they think the other teams are doing?
Absolutely. We have GPS traces on every other team and every other car. You know how fast they're going around a corner. You know what speed they're carrying through turn six. You know what speed they're doing on the straight, et cetera, et cetera. So you know everything that's going on. You've also got photographers that are paid to take pictures of the cars, because when they're in, especially in testing, you'll see the screens up at the front of the garages a lot. So as soon as a car goes onto the track, is the only time that it.
Oh, we've actually just managed to lose Matthew Carter there for a second. Let's give it a second, see if he pops back in. Well, in that case, let's just take a quick break to plug our Patreon page while we're there. I realised that Matt and I have to offer more to get people engaged in Patreon. It's been amazing that people have been willing to contribute for something that is definitely free and always will be, to say, actually, do you know what? That's worthwhile us supporting it financially. It's amazing. We cannot thank those people enough. But now we're going to be a little bit more proactive and start to offer better incentives for people to sign up and be a patron. Patrons, for those who don't know, are people who go to patreon.com/missedapex and decide to support us with regular micropayments, typically between $2 and $10. From now on, if you do this, you will get access to our unedited post-show waffle, which normally gets edited out of the video. You'll also get a fortnightly solo video logs from Matt and or myself. And it's nothing intense, just mobile videos of our thoughts from the week. Now, Matt, we have a big panel, but it is you and I that are directly supported by Patreon. So I thought that maybe we could also have semi-regular video chats that's a little bit more loose, a little bit more free for the patrons to consume. What do you reckon?
I reckon that, along with the mug, would make them happy.
Right, now you've just brought hardware into it and shipping and cost. No, let's just offer something ethereal and free to produce. Curse you, trumpets.
No, that's okay. I think it's entirely appropriate. And I am hoping that it will get a positive reception from the people who've decided to support us.
Now, honestly, we had no idea that people wanted that post-show stuff, but we received a surprising amount of requests from people who had missed the stream, but liked the post-show chats we had. And this is the other area where you guys are completely key. Without you, we would not have known that this is something people wanted. Your feedback is essential. But before you get too excited, we will point out the post-show stuff isn't real content. It's not planned, and it's not always relevant to anything. So go to missedapexpodcast.com/support or navigate to the menu and click about and then support, and consider becoming a patron of Missed Apex Podcast.
We have driver laps, and I thought I would just, since we talked about it, throw in who did the most laps. And surprising no one at all, it was Pierre Gasly at the top of the heap, followed very closely, interestingly, by Sebastian Vettel and Valtteri Bottas. Everybody, time to play bingo. And at the bottom end, including regular drivers only, actually, we have pretty much Lewis Hamilton and Kimi Raikkonen. So I just, now we all know that. And, oh gosh, and the Force India drivers, who, of course, they didn't do very many laps because their car didn't do very many laps.
But they didn't pay for an engine.
They didn't pay for an engine. And I had made this surmise just looking at their mileage, that Force India, and because we've heard a couple of other rumors here and there, might be in a period of their finances where money is very, very tight, and that might be what we're seeing now, might be a reflection of that, or it might just be a reflection of they decided the weather was not going to help them at all and they would save their miles for next week. Also possible. But when you're talking about steering wheels, immediately what I thought of was, I recently watched Grand Prix Driver, that scene where they give Stoffel Van Dorn the steering wheel, and then they give him the thing, and they're like, well, here's 9,000 pages of what it does. And then they basically say to him, and oh yeah, anything you don't like, we'll change it to whatever you want. And just look on his face. How do you manage that with a brand new driver? I mean, don't you sort of have to take him by the hand and lead him through that process a little bit?
Of course you do. Yeah, exactly. And I watched Grumpy Driver as well, actually, the other day. And one of the things that really stood out for me, just go off on a slight tangent, yeah. I was so pleased that they had exactly the same meetings as we used to have at Lotus, even big McLaren with all their money and all their weight, where they were talking about the fact they only had one floor. Because we used to have those meetings all the time. It was, you know, we've only got one of this part, we've only got one of that part, we can only get that there. So I was so pleased that McLaren were in the same boat and they were having the same heads in hands conversation. That was, it was really interesting. But yeah, the drivers, yeah, you need to walk them through it. You need to make sure the driver's comfortable. Obviously, at the end of the day, he needs to have whatever he needs to have to hand and in the right place that makes sense for him. Because some of the drivers want to be able to press for a drink with one hand and or whatever. So it's all about making the driver as comfortable as possible. And yeah, you have to hold the hand and walk them through it.
And now we've got a couple of points from the chat room and the panel as well. We've got a question here, a conundrum, if you like, from Utter Shambles, who says, at the end of last year, people were clearly turning down the apparently quick Renault power unit to survive races. Given the restricted testing, would Mr. Carter play safe or go for death and glory in Australia? So kind of what we were talking about before about team principals having unfettered access to all the modes. Do you really think that you would just go, I just want the result now, never mind six races time?
For sure I would have done, yeah. If cards are off the table, if it was, you know, you can do whatever you want, but you can turn this engine up to full max, then yes, I would go for it. Because pretty much like we did in Spa in 2015, you know, it was, you know, Mercedes made the decision there to turn that engine up and to give us those extra engine modes because we got a podium, and that podium did the world of good for the team, for the sponsors, for everyone. So if you can see that you're going to make progress, then yeah, I'd absolutely give it full beans and not worry about the rest of the season.
And this is it. This is why I'm so upset about the three engines this season. It's not even about to do with cost or reliability versus performance. It's the sporting thing that you are going to be affected five races later by something, or have to make a tactical decision to not go for seventh or eighth place in a race because you think, well, actually Monza's coming up and we'll be fighting for podiums there. So that's where we need to spend our engine hours. And that must be really frustrating for the teams.
I tend to agree with you, and I think maybe they've gone a little bit too far, but it is all about 21 races. You know, it's all about having the best car over that period of time and managing. And that's the same as, I'm trying to think of an analogy, I don't know, a soccer player not running, using all his energy up in the first 5 minutes of a game and making sure that he lasts a full 90 minutes. You know, that's what the sport is about. Mm. You know, it's about, you know, what's the classic phrase, in order to finish first you have to finish. So you have to do 21 races, and I think three engines is possibly going a little bit too far. But otherwise, you would just end up in a great big arms race of Mercedes-Benz putting a brand new engine in their car every single race and not allowing the customer teams to do it.
Trumpets.
So you would almost make the gap bigger than smaller.
But trumpets, surely it's like a footballer at halftime going, do you know what? It's a cup final on Thursday. I'm just going to stroll around for the rest of the game.
Well, it is, but as a potential counterpoint, if you only know you have the chance to be competitive in one or two races, and the championship is not really, you know, at play for you relative to your sponsors, well, then if you're going to run completely, I guess I can't say this on this Family Safe show, if you're going to run completely flat out, in meantime, everybody else is trying to tiptoe around the second of their third engines to not blow it up before they get to the next specification, well, we might actually see some much more interesting racing as a direct result of that.
I mean, we just have to be a little bit careful that we don't go with flat out against tiptoeing around, because, you know, obviously the margins are much, much narrower than that. But that does happen. I mean, Red Bull for the last two or three seasons have focused on Singapore as being a race that they are very, very good at. Because for whatever reason, because of the way that track is laid out and set up for them, their car works very well on that. And McLaren last year at Monaco, you know, McLaren knew that the only track that they really had a shot on was going to be Monaco. So they tried to configure their car for Monaco. Didn't necessarily work. We did the same thing when we had the Mercedes-Benz engines. Obviously, we knew that power was the power of the engine was going to be key for us. So we ran an incredibly low drag setup at Monza. And to a slightly lesser extent at Spa, which is where we got the podium, because we knew that, you know, on that power track with the Mercedes-Benz engine, we had a shell.
So trumpets, are you thinking that perhaps we might get Toro Rosso, being in its experimental year with Honda, just kind of accepting, yeah, we're going to start at the back of the grid for three or four races. Yeah, we'll probably use eight power units. But my gosh, we're going to have two or three amazing races from the back.
Well, assuming Honda's on board with that financially, then yeah, you could be to me, that would, if I was Red Bull, that's exactly what I'd be willing to fund.
Lord Nuka in the chat room says, Matthew, did Lotus ever use a race as an extended testing session? Something we hear in the commentary all the time, but did it ever happen?
Yeah, many times. So often, if I don't know, if you'd had something had gone wrong with the car and it'd come into the pits and we'd had an incredibly long pit stop and you'd come back out in 19th, 20th place, then yeah, you would, obviously you can't change anything that's on the car. You can't bring the car back into the garage and put a new, a completely different front wing or whatever on. But we used to quite often go and run and just to go through the simulation of running on track. So yes, it would happen regularly.
So let's,
what we also used to do, which is quite interesting, is if both the cars were out, the guys on the pit wall would pick another car and they would try and run the race for that other car. So they would stay sitting on the pit wall. So both our cars were out of the race and they would go and pick, Bottas in the Williams when he was at Williams. And they would say, all right, okay, so now we're going to try and run our strategy according to what Williams are doing and see whether or not we would pit him at the same time, what we would do. And therefore, between the two guys on the pit wall, they're effectively practicing real time what they would do in a race, so the strategy that they would impose.
Oh, poor Lotus. Now I'm just getting images of like cool running type scenes while the other teams are Switzerland are there with their fancy things. You know, there's poor Lotus in their wooden their wooden toboggan going down the streets of the Caribbean. Right, okay, so I do want to get your opinion on the more political side of Formula One. I know that you have deep connections that we're willing to probe and explore, but one of the things we found most fascinating this week has been the news that Formula One are essentially becoming a broadcaster. They've decided to launch F1 TV, and they're going to supply via desktop at first and then through an app, basically broadcasts of the race using the Sky commentators. But it does feel an awful lot like, even though they can't do it in the UK because they've bought into a sport that has a deal with Sky TV until, I believe, 2021, they've effectively said to the broadcasters around the world, we don't actually need broadcasters. We can broadcast ourselves. Your time is up.
Yep. Well, is there a question? Was there a question in there?
I just kind of wanted your
like
statement. What you could say is, what an insightful bit of punditry, Spanners. You seem to have
amazing.
Summed it all up.
Basically, it's, and again, without wishing to be the stickler about this, but it does come down to money at the end of the day. So Bernie signed deals with broadcasters all around the world, and that was a big chunk of the money that was coming in. Liberty, obviously, Liberty Media are a media company. They're a broadcasting company in America. So they understand broadcasting, I would say, better than Bernie / FOM did going back over the last 10, 15 years. So they've probably decided, or they obviously have decided, and it unfortunately probably does come back down to money, that they don't need to take the big chunks of money from the broadcasters all around the world, that they can earn more money themselves doing it themselves. And I guess as long as it doesn't affect, I mean, I don't know how it's going to work, but as long as it doesn't affect the way that people watch the race, then you know, whether you pay your money to FOM or to Sky or to Canal Plus or whoever, then I don't really see it makes a huge difference.
So the question is, will it work?
Yes.
So yes, right. So in 10 years' time, are we basically sitting, we're in a world where to watch F1 anywhere in the world, you've got your $12 subscription to FOM?
I can see that happening. Yeah. I mean, obviously the world of broadcasting is changing hugely. I mean, so the Formula One Diaries or whatever that thing was called, Grand Prix Driver, whatever that was called, I watched that on Amazon Prime. So, you know, the world is changing. The way that you watch and you download anything is changing.
See, that was very popular with the insight into McLaren. It would be even more popular, don't you think, Trumpets, if, I don't know, say a streaming service was to do that for Red Bull. You'd quite like to watch that, wouldn't you, Matt?
Well, or, you know, even dare I bring up other series that might already be engaged in this thing. Like we've heard that maybe Formula E might be up to something similar in terms of putting in, our spies in the paddock have informed us. I don't know if you've heard anything that there may be something going on along those fronts. I'm not a team principal, but I would see that as pretty darn good in terms of maybe being able to attract sponsors to my team, having access to a channel like that.
I'm going to take a wild guess. If Amazon did one, I'm going to say that perhaps Netflix are going to want to have their piece of the pie as well. Complete wild speculation. Now, did you have a question or a point about F1 TV in general, Trumpets?
Well, I think the answer is we would like, from a team principal point of view, it doesn't matter to you as long as the images go out to more people, or would it matter to you?
I don't think, so from a team principal point of view, all you're interested in is obviously the sponsors. So it's what's best for the sponsors. And that generally is the more people that see it. Depending on who your sponsors are, then you can talk about demographics and areas and regions. But generally, the more people that see Formula One, then the more sponsors are going to be encouraged to come in. From that point of view, I don't think that the team principals really care who's showing it where around the world, as long as people are viewing it and the show and the sport is continued to be put on the way that it is.
Now, if I was to lie to you, Matthew Carter, and say to you that we have 5 minutes of our scheduled pre-planned recording time left, I would then continue into what else I wanted to talk to you about had we not run over. Are you okay for the minute, are you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Now, I know that you have a lot to do with organising events, for example, and I'm not sure how much of that you can talk about, but obviously F1's talking about going to a few new locations that might surprise people, Hanau, Miami, Buenos Aires, when people are really, they're wanting to go back to, you know, these classic European tracks. So yes, we're not going into the Middle East now, but we're going to, you know, places that people might not in this modern era be familiar with F1. Is this something that excites you, or does this, you know, scream of more mayors wanting street circuits in their particular province?
There's lots of different areas to talk about there. One thing that it doesn't worry me, but I think is a little bit troubling, is that the number of races. I think if it gets much more than, and I appreciate from a spectator's point of view, they'd love there to be a race every weekend, but from a team's point of view, it's very, very difficult. I think 21 races is almost breaking point. And then you're going to end up in a situation where there's a potential that you would need to have two separate teams of people, because I don't think you can ask the mechanics. So bear in mind, when I used to go to the races, I used to arrive on a Friday and leave on a Sunday. The guys who were setting up the garage quite often arrive there on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and leave maybe on the Monday, because they do take the garages down very quickly. If there's a back-to-back race, there's weeks, months on end when they don't see their families, they don't come back to the UK or to wherever they live. So I think more races isn't necessarily a good thing for the sport. I think that the location of the races, as a fan, if you like, I think as long as the tracks are interesting and they present opportunities for more overtaking, then I think it's a good thing. If they're being selected because of where they are geographically, or because of how much money they're giving to Formula One, it's not necessarily a good thing.
Which one do you think is more likely? Wild speculation.
Honestly, I think in the Bernie era, for sure, it was all about money. And that's why they ended up going to the places they went to. Going forward, I'm not so sure that Liberty aren't trying to put on. I'm not sure they're not looking at it from a slightly different angle, in so much as they're saying, look, if we put on a really, really good show, then we're maybe going to get more money from the TV, from the broadcasting rights. We're going to get more money from people that come to the events, et cetera, et cetera. So they might be looking at it from a slightly different angle. I'm not 100% convinced, but I think that could be the case.
Okay, fantastic. We are definitely out of time now. However, I will need your expert opinion to give me weights. Our WhatsApp group for our panelists, of which there's about 12, is just in a state of just constant argument, and never more over the last 3 years than in pre-season. Now, I've been arguing, I think, much like you, that we're going to see pretty much the status quo. Maybe a surprise from Sauber, perhaps Red Bull, not having as bad a start as they did last season and starting a bit stronger. However, I've got two key arguments with people. Now, when I have these arguments, if you argue the status quo, you've got fans from every team saying, this is our year. This is the year that my driver/team is going to come up. So I'm definitely going to lose some of these bets over the course of the season. I just want to know where you stand. Now, my main one is with panelist Anil Palmer. We have a bet between Renault and Force India. I think that Force India are going to continue to outperform their budget, and that Renault haven't really shown that works team potential so far. And I don't see any reason to think why they're suddenly going to jump three or four places. So, wild speculation on the line. Force India or Renault?
Force India.
Force India, you agree with me. Give me several reasons why so I can pummel Anil into the dirt.
I still believe that the Mercedes-Benz engine is by far the most superior engine in the series at the moment. And I think that Force India have now spent 3 years. This will be their fourth year with that engine. They understand how it works. They have got the same engineers, mechanics, etc. They've got two very good drivers.
Anil's in the chat room. I didn't realize he was in the chat room. Ha! Suck it, Anil.
And my final point, which is possibly a little bit more controversial, is that I've seen firsthand how Renault operate, and they have got a long way to go.
Fantastic. Trumpets?
Well, I would just add the following two things. Number one, we've heard from Renault that they will be operating with reduced power in order to focus on reliability at testing. And I've also seen a headline go by, though I will admit to being one of those bad people who did not bother to read the article, where the headline basically stated that they feel like, they feel like clever use of penalties might be key to getting the most out of their power unit this season. So if you are a Renault customer, you're already talking about starting off basically with the 2017 engine in terms of power, although I'm sure most of them will be happy that they won't blow up like the last third of the season. And number two, you're already looking at least one race starting from the back of the grid, because they're going to need to introduce four separate specifications in order to really get where they want to throughout the course of the season.
So basically, just very, very quickly, what happened with Renault was during the end of the previous engine era, when Red Bull were winning left, right and center, engines all pretty much became on a par with each other. So whether it was Mercedes or Renault or Ferrari, Renault really, really cut down on the number of people and the personnel and the experience that they had in Viry in France, at the same time that Mercedes were ramping up because they knew that the new hybrid engine was going to come in. I'm not going to suggest that the French are in any way arrogant, but they 100% believed that because they had the history of success with Red Bull, that they were going to be able to wander into this new engine era and they were going to be successful. So they didn't bother ramping up. They didn't bother particularly going down any special routes. And then when we started the 2014 season, well, I mean, history is there. It's written down. It's in black and white. I mean, we testing for us, the first few, I don't know if you remember the 2014 testing, but we didn't do any laps because every time we went out in the car, the MGUK shaft broke because they'd manufactured it. They'd made the engine with too small a hole to hold the MGUK shaft, which twisted and broke. And it was completely impossible to do anything about it. So we literally didn't, every time the car went out on track, the MGUK broke and it came back in. And it was the same for Red Bull as well. So I think that the way that Renault are, there was maybe 4 years, I would say, that they were, 3 years, they were behind Mercedes-Benz. And they, to this day, I don't think they are even remotely close to catching up. I think they make a step forward every year, much like Honda, but I think that Mercedes-Benz and Ferrari probably make even more of a step forward. As I keep saying, I mean, I'm not an engineer. I'm not particularly technically minded, but I remember taking Nick Chester, who was the technical director at Lotus, when we moved from Renault to Mercedes, to the first meeting with Mercedes, where they wheeled in a Mercedes-Benz engine on a rolling trolley. And he literally, his jaw nearly hit the floor because he couldn't believe how small it was. He couldn't believe how compact it was. He couldn't believe how the thing was designed and structured. And this was the first time. So we'd agreed the deal, but the first time we physically saw the engine, it rolled in on this rolling trolley. To me, it didn't look any different. It just looked like an engine. He was almost wetting himself. He was just, this is incredible. And then there followed a stream of about half an hour of constant questions between him and Andy Cowell, who's the guy that runs Mercedes-Benz engines, as to what this does and how that's worked and how that did that and how that did that.
So it's Christmas. Et cetera. It's Christmas for him.
For me, I think that Renault are making strides, but I think they've got an awfully long way to go to catch up to the back. I think that Red Bull flatter the Renault engine. My personal opinion is that I think Red Bull flattered the Renault engine because the Red Bull car is superb. And I don't buy that McLaren say they've got the best car in terms of design without the engine. I think that Red Bull do by far. I think the Red Bull car with a Mercedes engine, it would beat Mercedes.
Well, McLaren was...
I think Toto... Yeah. I think Toto knows that as well, and I think that's why they wouldn't give him an engine, and I think that Sergio Marchionne knows that as well, and that's why Red Bull wouldn't get a Ferrari engine as well. I think the Red Bull is by far the best car on the grid, and I think they've probably got the best drivers as well. So I think they flattered to deceive with Renault, and I think the Renault Works team and McLaren are going to end up behind. It's a long way of me saying that you're going to win the bet, but I think they're going to end up a little way behind Force India.
No, it's a great answer. And I'm hoping we can get you on sometime before Australia and sometime after the second test. So that what I'd love to do is to get you, me, Matt, perhaps Chris, and lay down sort of our markers in the sand of where we think everything's going to go. Because I hate when we have these arguments and then later on in time, people don't remember exactly what it was they said. So I like getting it nice and straight there. But yeah, the 2014 Renault was so bad that a four-time world champion got out of the car, basically cried and said he didn't want to do testing anymore. So I think that's testament to that as well. And then the last one is Bradley Philpott, our racing expert. I am loath to argue with Bradley Philpott on anything to do with racing, but he is determined that McLaren are going to come out of the box, not only be race winners, but he says win it.
No.
Good. Go on, I think that's fine.
Rewind 30 seconds or a minute or 5 minutes, whatever it was, and then replay that back. For the same thing, I think the Renault engine is probably better than where Honda were last year, but I don't think that... My personal opinion is that I say that a lot because I was told to say that whenever I was at Lotus. I had to keep saying it was my personal opinion and not the opinion of Lotus or of anyone else. But my personal opinion is that McLaren, have flattered to deceive a lot with their car. I think they set up the car knowing that the engine was bad so that they could say, well, look how good it goes around corners or whatever, because it's easy to put a ton of downforce on a car, or it's easy to angle the rake of a car knowing that you're not looking for the speed down the straight because you're so bad. And I think that was proved in quite a few races last year. I think Spa was one of the races where they specifically focused on sector two, which is very twisty and turny, but they lost everything was going past them on the straights. And they do that because they then turn around, or Boulier then turns around and says, look at us in sector two, look how amazing our car is. But it's easy to do that. I think you can do that with any car, but you know, it's the car that's the quickest around the whole of the lap. And that means that you have to go in a straight line as well as go around the corners.
I love it. I couldn't agree more. Trumpets.
So basically you're saying that much of McLaren's season last year was essentially an exercise in desperately trying to attract sponsors, however they could.
Is that ever in doubt? I thought everyone knew that.
Of course,
yeah. I mean, that's what McLaren are all about at the moment. You know, that's their whole raison d'être at the moment, is to get sponsors and to try and push themselves forward. And it's again, my opinion.
You don't have to do that here. It's fine.
I know. Okay. So it's a flailing swipe of the sword to go back to Renault, because the Renault engine is clearly, to me, the third best engine there on the grid. So maybe slightly better than Honda, but you know, to go to Renault and say they're going to win races, etc., and they will not be on par with Red Bull. I'll lay that one down as a mark if you want. They won't be on par with Red Bull. Red Bull will be far superior.
Good. Just say whatever you want on here. We'll just claim it's parody if we ever get dragged up in front of the law courts. Matt, we're wrapping up. What words do you want to tell us to bring this fantastic episode to a close?
Well, I just wanted to know if we could get one more opinion out of our guest before we went.
Sorry, Matthew.
That's okay. Well, no, and only because it's such a business thing. And if we don't have time, that's fine. I will say, look for me on the Twitters and we'll be good. But we had the article about the loss of revenue, and just curious as to your reaction with that. Is this Liberty making a good investment and the teams are going to have to suck it up and wait for it to pay off? Or would you have been as a principal just upset about this and wishing that Liberty had gone a different way so that you didn't suffer any loss of revenue yourself as a team?
In terms of what? In terms of the revenue that the teams are getting from Liberty?
Yeah, there was like, what is about a $47 million drop in overall revenue, which means the team split of it went down.
So would I, as a team principal, be upset with that? Yeah, of course. I mean, that's as I think I've said before on the podcast, there's only two real forms of revenue that come into a Formula One team. It's sponsorship and the money you get from the commercial rights holder. And that's it. You know, and they're set in stone at the start of the season pretty much. And that's what you have to work with. So any reduction in that affects what you can do as a team. I think Liberty are trying to look at the bigger picture, but yeah, I'd be upset. Of course, you know, if you, and I think they increased the, and this is maybe a not so well-known thing, but you pay an entry fee as well based on the amount of points that you got the season before. So that's a whole another interesting topic, that towards the end of the season, you get to a point where if you start scoring points, Force India was a classic last season because they were so far ahead of fifth and so far behind third that when they were scoring points, it was costing them money. So every point they scored means that they had to pay more to enter into the competition for 2018. So what? I was looking at the screen thinking, Jesus, you know, I mean, they every time they're ding-donging around for fourth and fifth, it's costing them another $100,000 for next year.
Well, the answer was simple. No team orders at Force India. Just let them clatter into each other. Maybe that's what they were doing all along.
I think you need some Alonso-style retirements at that point. But that's an FIA fee, though, not an F.
Exactly. Yes, of course. But it's a cost for the team. Obviously, it's something that you have to pay. I don't know if you remember though, when they release the list of entrants into the thing, sometimes they have a little asterisk next to them, and we had one of those because we didn't pay for a long time. We missed our deadline once, and we had a little asterisk next to us as being an entrant into the season.
Matthew Carter, we have definitely taken a lot of your time. You've been more than generous.
No problem. Now
that you are. Effectively, you know, let's call you. This is your fourth visit. You're a regular on Missed Apex podcast, and you've made waves in the podcasting world. The whole paddock's been talking about you since you've been doing a bit of podcasting. That means surely now you've got to embrace social media and become a Twitter darling. Come on.
Not yet.
Okay. Guys, I will work on him. There is an account there. It's all like private and that, but we will. Come on. We'll tease it out of him. Matthew Carter, thank you very much. Would you like to point anyone at anything at all? No. Good. Matthew Trumpis over there, though. He is a shameless self-promoter. Surely you would like people to follow you on Twitter, Matt.
At MattPT55 on the Twitters, and keep an eye out on my wife's account at AWeaverWrite. She's got a new book dropping for those of you who are fans of the Grantham Girls. She's got a little thing coming up, just published by herself. And we may have some good news in the near future about some other things book-wise. And yeah, there you go.
Matthew Trumpet's wife's books. A good value. It's a few quid. She'll be occupied for a little while you do what you want. Then she'll want your attention soon afterwards. Who could ask for more? Follow me at Spanners Ready and follow the account of this podcast at Missed Apex F1. We noticed something now that we're regularly in the top 200 of the iTunes charts for sports and professional sport. When we got just 3 extra ratings, we jumped up 20 spots in that chart. Why not help us out by going over to iTunes and leaving us a review? As long as it's 5 stars, you can slag off Matt and Chris as much as you want. Let's see now. What else do we want to do? We want to tell you to join us after testing on Sunday next week, 8 p.m. We're also very soon going to be speaking to Jack Nicholls and, believe it or not, we are going to be speaking to Mr. Gallagher, also of the BBC. So until next time, remember that wounds heal, ladies dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex with Matthew Carter. Sorry, it's your fault, Matthew. You were far too interesting and insightful. It's not our fault the time ran long.
It's okay. It's all good. Sunday afternoon here, it's fine.
Yeah, it's nice and relaxed. Once you get into it and having a nice sort of proper chat, I really want to get like your just general opinions about the sport now, but we just get driven down a tunnel because you've been there and we go, actually, no, I just want to ask you more stuff about the things you know. But at some point, like as we relax into the season, if you enjoy doing that kind of general punditry, we would love to have you as just like, you know, as an expert witness sort of thing.
Yeah, no problem. No problem at all.
You always make me nervous when I ask you a long question. You go, yeah. you bugger. I know you've got more to say. I know it.
Is there a question there? More of an observation, really.
No, it's like, the thing is, though, I can see the twinkle in his eye, and he knows full well that he's got a big answer, but he's just going, oh, I've got you on the ropes there, you Yeah.
Do we want to do comment of the week or not?
Tell you what, Matt. Just for a change, why don't we do comment of the week? Matthew Carter, do you want us to let you go and then we'll do comment of the week?
No, I'm good.
Awesome. Oh, okay. In that case, Matt, since I've forgotten comment of the week, we're going to get Matthew Carter here to be our final judge. Why don't you give us the contenders for
comment of the week?
It's the second week in a row I've forgotten it, Tom Pitts. What's going on?
It
used to be all
like
over this.
We do it on purpose, except for, honestly, really, we don't. So we're going to work in reverse chronological order this time, starting with Evangelos Heteroclitus. Quote, it's my personal opinion that allegedly it wouldn't be an exaggeration to suppose that McLaren will struggle for fourth in the Constructors' Championship and narrowly miss.
Get off the fence, Fonseca. Was it Fonseca?
No, that was Heteroclitus.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Low stealth, going with, I'm not going to suggest that the French are arrogant, but I will explain what suggesting it sounds like.
Yes, that's in contention.
That low stealth, continuing backwards, that green sheet is Matt's passive Patreon plea.
The whole show is a passive Patreon plea.
Yeah, I mean, please, look at us. We need all the help we can get.
There's holes in my jumper. No.
Yeah, I know. I wear the same shirt every time. It's tragic. Phoenix, 2001. Much rather 100% of my money for watching F1 goes into F1 than most going to the Murdoch Mothi. I think that's but the A is missing.
I support both our Sky and our Liberty Overlords, whoever ends up winning the final battle.
Right. Dan Drury dropping the interesting factoid. You also know when and if they opened their DRS, referring to the GPS trace, and how long for. That's a cheeky one in terms of chasing sponsors.
Oh,
Dom
yes.
Byrne, one of our favorites, getting into the chase with accepted Ferrari, where a Kemi mile is approximately twice as long as a Seb mile, referring to the mileage disparity between the two drivers. Where are we going to go? Clear skill, obviously having a bad day. I have an exam tomorrow, and you give me diaries of an F1 boss? Come on, it's so hard decision.
One of the biggest compliments is that people jump on the live stream after they get the notification and complain that there's a live stream on, because that's just killed the next 2 hours of their evening.
Absolutely. I listen to podcasts, says Steve Ridge. Normally I listen to podcasts at 1.5 times speed. This just sounds weird. Darren Johnson getting in with the clever pun. We were stuck with snowdrifts. Trumpets was stuck with the drifters. And Ian Erasmus, hello, first time I've managed to catch a live stream. So excited to finally see how the mediocrity is made.
Cheers.
Last, Lord Nuker, the problem with alcohol is when you combine it with alcohol. Personally, I think I have to go with low stealth. But you have the final say there, Mr. Carter. What do you think?
Obviously, Matthew Carter, you were taking notes all the way through that. Who do you want to give it to?
Clearly, the Renault arrogant comment.
Reread French, that for us, Trumpets.
French, yeah. The second, I think it was the second one you said.
Yeah, I'm not going to suggest the French are arrogant, but I will explain what suggesting it would look like. Low stealth, you are this week's winner of Comment of the Week.
Comment of the Week.
I just want to take this opportunity to say a great thank you to our French listeners for their devotion and commitment over the years. Thank you so much. I can't, merci beaucoup. We love you. Good night, Vienna. Good. I think we're clear. We'll call that the end of the audio. You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Sorry, Mr. Carter. I hate to be picky, but there was just a sniff through my intro there.
Okay, apologies.
No, that's all right. That's why I said, have you got a cold? You're a bit sniffy.
He doesn't really, I'll tell you this in confidence, he doesn't really hate to be picky. He kind of
Damn it, busted. Stop giving away my secrets. All right, here we go. Being picky, take two.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.